Greetings from Podcastville, you bad motherfuckers. It's July the 10th or the 11th. Who gives a fuck? It's a beautiful day to be alive. The Church of What's Happened Now is brought to you by Quip Electronic Toothbrush. Let me tell you something. When it comes to electronic toothbrushes, nobody has it down like Quip. Why? Because they have sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. People brush too hard, and some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive. 75% of us use old, worn-out bristles that are ineffective. Quip is one of the first electronic toothbrushes that's accepted by the American Dental Association, and they're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals. Beat that. And they have thousands of verified five-star reviews. So why do you love Quip? Let me tell you why. It's easy to carry. It's got the timer. It's got a three-month battery life that will last through a season of fun-filled weekends away this summer. So do me a favor, all right? Quip starts at about $25, and if you go to getquip.com/Joey right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's right, free. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/Joey. Get Quip, GETQUIP.com/Joey. This is the electronic toothbrush you've been waiting for. The Church is also brought to you by CBDLion.com. Are you buying CBD all at a liquor store? If you die of cancer, you deserve what you get, you miserable bastard. I'm introducing you to CBDLion.com, one of the best CBDs on the market. Guess who says it? I do, because I've tried them all. CBD Lion makes their products from start to finish. CBD Lion has you covered, whether it's vape, cartridges, shatter, tincture, forget about it. Go to CBDLion.com and check out their third-party lab results yourself. Go to CBDLion.com, press in Church at checkout, and get 20% off your order delivered to your house. You don't have to go nowhere for CBD when you got CBD Lion. Kick this motherfucking muley. Are you kidding me or what? It's the Church of What's Happened.
The sky is burning. I believe my soul's on fire. You are, I'm learning.
Bad company for you motherfuckers on a Wednesday morning. Ian Edwards, the Christ Killer, and Uncle Joey, bitches. Here we go. What's going on, my brother?
Man, you know, just chilling, watching a Lee's fear of bugs.
Oh, that bug was fucking big.
I normally don't have one, but he just kept throwing it at me.
I had to throw it at you.
It seems right, because I don't know if you know, but this is 700.
Congratulations.
So this is, it seems right that you're torturing me with a bug, throwing a bug at me for 8 times.
You might not survive this 700.
I'm definitely not.
That fucking bug was big, though.
Huge.
That motherfucker locked up. How are you?
I'm good, man.
You looking good?
I'm trying, bro.
You got a special coming out on Friday.
Man.
You're still the smoothest motherfucker down at the store and shit. What's happening?
Man, just chilling. You looking good, too. Lee got some cardio running from a bug, it's good to see him exercise.
We made him burn some calories today.
That's enough for a few months.
What's going on with the soccer thing? You in?
Still going, man.
Women's soccer, you all in?
Yeah, I'm all in. It finished Sunday.
Right. No, I know yeah. that they won. They just got back to fucking Jersey, and they're going to have a parade tomorrow in New York.
Damn, y'all didn't even know that part. I just watched the final, and then I just left the bar.
Yeah, I don't know nothing about nothing. I don't know nothing about who won. I just know USA chicks won. This is the fourth championship.
Yeah, the fourth.
Second in
Women's
a row.
World Cup. Yeah, second in a row.
Shit like that. They're only getting 4 million. Men are getting 100 million. They're all upset.
I got something to say about that, too. Well, first, like yesterday I was at the bar, and I watched the game, and after the game, everybody watched the trophy ceremony. But after that, everything dissipated. And that let me know we are not in a soccer country. If you are in any country in the world that's a soccer country and you win a World Cup, whether men or women, you are celebrating for weeks. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're hearing drums and shit outside. An impromptu carnival just broke out. People are taking off from work all week. Like, yeah, they won. But after they won, it was just over. You know what I'm saying? And that's not, like, you're in South America and you win some shit. Like, people are getting pregnant right now based off that title. You know
it's
what I'm
like
saying?
In Mexico and the guy scored the goal on the wrong thing and the narcos shot him.
Yeah, that's at Colombia. Like, so weeks later, that, you know, people are still hurt over that stuff. You know what I'm saying?
That's
like,
crazy.
It's more personal. And until America, everybody, including the players and the people who love the game, get that personal. You know, and I'm saying we should kill somebody. I'm not saying that. Until we win something, like get to the point where we're so into it that we, you know, when somebody wins an NBA title or a NFL title, like it's a riot. Was there any riots yesterday?
No.
No. Everybody just clapped and walked home.
Where did your love for soccer come from? Your native country? Growing up, I mean, where did your love for soccer come from?
I was just born into it. Like, I was born in England, right? So then you can't escape it there. It was either soccer or cricket, and fuck cricket. Not fucking with cricket. And then, so it's soccer. We played as a kid in the schoolyard, like, almost every day. And then when we moved to Jamaica when I was 9, Jamaica is a former colony of Britain, so one of the few things that they left us was soccer. You know what I'm saying? So moving there, that was another, everybody loved soccer. That's how dudes used to get girls in high school. When you played on a high school soccer team in Jamaica, like, you're in the newspaper. You know what I mean? It's like college sports here. So it's like, you'd want to, you were motivated. You were almost a pro. You know what I mean? Like, high school football, soccer is big in Jamaica. You know, you score a goal, your team wins, you save a goal, you get a red card, or anything, you're in the paper, everybody all over the island knows about you. You'll have a nickname and everybody knows about you. So it's just a big deal.
Does it upset you as a real fan? Because I don't hate it, but whenever I see the World
Cup...
Sound
like you hate it, bro.
I kind of do. Whenever the World Cup comes around, people pretend like they care. Mm-hmm. Like, they had those horns right a few years ago. And they really don't. Like, I mean, there's some people who do like soccer, but it seems like a huge majority of them are just doing it so they can drink at 6 a.m. And then they don't. Who really cares?
Well, let me ask you a question. How old are you, Ian?
I never tell.
How old were you when you came to the States?
17.
And what year was that?
That I never tell, because then people could figure it out.
Okay. Yeah. Give me an approximation of what year you came to the States.
Let's say late 80s, 90s.
Okay, so yeah. In like 73, I got out of Catholic school, mm-hmm. and I was allowed to play football, mm-hmm. but I was too heavy for the Eagles. It was the Eagles and the Patriots in North Bergen, in my hometown.
Mm-hmm. Those are high school teams?
Those are high school. No. Those are Recreation League.
Recreation. Oh, okay.
So I had to play in, I think it was St. Anthony. Somebody, a Catholic school in Union City, had a what they called semi-pro. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't semi-pro. It was just a bunch of fucking kids that couldn't make weight on the regular thing, or they had bad grades. So I went up there for a couple of games, and I kind of enjoyed it. It was a little rough. Mm-hmm. And I was at my mother's bar one day, and a Spanish dude said to me, "Do you play football?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Do you want to come play at Hudson County Park on Saturday?" I go, "Sure." Uh-huh. And he picked me up at my mother's house. You know, when I got in the car, nobody had a football shirt on. Nobody had a helmet. Nobody had fucking shoulder pads.
Hilarious.
And when I got there, they were playing soccer.
Oh.
And I go, "What the fuck is this shit?" And at that time, it was in 1975. I mean, Pelé was huge.
Right.
You know, that's all I knew about soccer, that Pelé was huge. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't what it is today. I mean, it took a long time to get to what it is today.
Yeah.
When my first daughter was born in 1990, mm-hmm. in 95, she was playing soccer. And I was like, "What?" Mm. Like, I was in shock that it had grown to a rec sport now. I thought it was big in my area because of the Spanish population.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because of the South American population, yeah. The Colombians and shit like that.
Ecuadorians, El Salvadorians, yeah.
But it has grown. It has made progress. What you have to come with grips is that this country belongs to the NFL.
Yeah.
They even gave it its own fucking day. They took it away from the church. What does that tell you? You know, what does that
tell you? What was the day they took away from the church?
Sunday.
Oh, yeah. It's hilarious.
They took away. They couldn't take away a Saturday. College right. football said, fuck the right. Jews. And they took away a Saturday. But that's how big football is.
Right.
And you have to come to... That's why I love when Rogan even would say, uh-huh. I don't give football to Rogan. What Dana White does on a Saturday, mm-hmm. they do 13 of those on Sunday.
Right.
Twice the size, more tickets, shirts, volume, and they got it.
Yeah, because one game holds more than a UFC event. You got to put on multiple fights.
They do that every Saturday. What right. the UFC did this week, mm-hmm. they do that every Sunday.
Yeah.
For 17 weeks plus the playoffs plus preseason. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, what are you talking about? The size is, it's two different things we're talking about. Soccer will grow in this country, uh-huh. but it'll never beat out the NFL.
No, I know. Like, somebody asked me before, I said, like, what's wrong with soccer in America? I said, America didn't invent soccer. That's the problem with soccer in this country. Like, every sport you're talking about, like football, baseball, just whatever other sports, they're thriving in America. They were invented here. And, you know, soccer's growing here, like you said, but I've accepted that it's never going to be as big. And then Lee was saying, do I get mad when World Cup time comes around and people
jump on the back? Yeah, like with every fucking sport, bro.
Yeah, but
when the Rams were playing, yeah. a bunch of blondes with Ram shirts on, I don't even know what a fucking Ram is. You know, nothing bothers me more than that. We were talking about concert shirts
right.
the other day on the podcast, how these new kids are just wearing shirts. They go buy a $40 concert shirt. And take them aside.
That makes you mad.
Give me two fucking songs from that album, and I'll suck your dick right here. They'll start stuttering. How can you represent?
But Joey, suppose they don't want a blowjob. That's why they're stuttering.
Who the fuck knows? You know, who doesn't want a blowjob? Unless you're fucking, you know. Who doesn't want their dick sucked? Everybody wants their dick sucked. Everybody wants their candy stroke. Even fucking Jesus wanted a blowjob.
I don't know, Joey. I love you, but if I was wearing a concert T-shirt and you say you offered me a blowjob to name two songs,
not me.
I'm gonna forget the two songs.
I'm gonna get somebody else to suck your dick.
Oh, okay.
But it's so weird how we just don't. Soccer is growing, right. And I tell you what, that same thing I saw in Hudson County in 1975 or whatever it was, today that same park has six or seven soccer fields lighted. Mm-hmm. They look like something. My buddy's the assemblyman, mm-hmm. so he redid that park. Half the park, they took away the baseball.
Is he? It's soccer. Where is he? Your buddy from
Jersey. We grew up together.
Is he American?
Yes.
Is
he's
he
Italian?
Like, what? He's Italian.
Oh, he's okay. Italian, but he knew that that's what our town is. Come on, North Bergen, Hudson County's got to be 60% Hispanic.
Right.
You know, so what are you going to do? In fact, football is down in this country.
Oh, right.
I believe soccer will grow now mm-hmm. because it's an activity that parents will put their kids in.
Yeah.
Look at the number of football programs now for kids under 12. I guarantee it's not what it was 10 years ago because parents aren't putting their kids.
Okay. They're worried about injuries and shit like
injuries
that.
Injuries and shit and brain damage. Yeah. So I think soccer will... That's another option, you know, instead of football, it's going to be soccer now.
Right.
Soccer, baseball, basketball, you know, it'll get bigger.
And I could be wrong. What you were just saying about how the NFL does so much more than the UFC, in, like, Europe, doesn't soccer or football do way more than the NFL? Like, aren't the stadiums huge?
Yeah, it's huge.
Like, yeah, but the NFL does great over there. Look what happened a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah,
the Red Sox mm-hmm. played the Yankees in England, right?
No, yeah, they're thinking about moving an NFL team to England.
It's huge.
Yeah. I mean... With TV and the way everything is, like, sports can travel, and sometimes it's a novelty to get, like, an American game there. So everybody's like, this game is going to happen one time here, so everybody comes to it. And then when I, you know, you go to Europe, they, like, I was in Europe doing shows, and I saw LeBron playing high school. His last high school game was on TV on a cable channel in England. And I was like, I mean... A high school fucking kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was that big. So, you know, sports travel, man. And then a lot of soccer players are friends with a lot of NFL players and basketball players. Like, they They talk on Twitter. They go visit each other. And they're, like, cool. Like, the big European stars, like the Neymars and the Messis and the Ronaldos. They know people over here. They know, you know, the Currys and the LeBrons and all that shit. So it's kind of really cool. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's. I mean, it's not as big as people would want it, but it's making leaps and bounds.
Yeah, I accept
that. In the last 30, 40 years, it's made a lot of fucking leaps and bounds. Do you still play soccer at all? You ever get out there?
Nah, my knees are bad.
That's it?
Yeah.
So now it's just stand up like a motherfucker.
It's just stand up like a motherfucker, yeah. Like, the last time I got an injury, Joey, I didn't even fall. I just played that day, and I just played lightly. And my leg was fucked up for 3 months. Like, I couldn't even walk. And, like, when you just get unexplained injuries, like, I didn't... he's flinching.
Well, no, I knew he was gonna fall on me, but he was readjusting. He just popped out.
It's hilarious.
Oh my god,
he's terrified over here, yo.
Yeah, I know. I definitely have what is it, Munchausen's? Like, what syndrome do I have?
You got every fucking syndrome. You understand? You got more syndromes than syndromes.
Jesus Christ.
Who gives a fuck at this point? Inhale that. That's good for you.
No, I'm never going to breathe your farts in.
That's good for the bronchitis. You know, look at your bronchitis went away.
Yeah, he just cured something.
Yeah, because I stopped doing the bong. Oh, my God.
I stopped doing the bong. Because you inhale these things. Look at you, see? And it cleaned out your lungs.
Yeah.
His farts are tremendous.
Yeah, you look healthier now.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do. Where's that fucking bug?
You're getting a workout, a fart out, everything.
God damn it, Joey.
What, the special, you excited about it?
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
When was the last time you put together a special? A couple of years ago. CD was with Conan.
Yeah, the CD was Conan. And I never had a special.
So this is your first special.
First special, man.
One of the best guys working today, one of the best joke writers in the business, and they treat you like fucking Magumba Jones. You know what I'm saying?
I know. It had to be, it's just the, if it wasn't for, like, the support of, like, you know, I write on shows and stuff, but if the support of, like, people like Rogan, you, like, Tosh and Burr, you know what I'm saying? Like comics that people respect, and just other comics, too. Like they all help you out more than, like, the industry sometimes, you know what I'm saying? Which is the industry's job sometimes, you know, comics with power. They have control, they have their own podcast and shit. They're like, fuck it, you should have something or you should have this. And I like the community of comedy for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have people on your podcast, including me, and you help them out and they come on and then they get more followers and all of a sudden their agency wants to help them more because they see that their following is growing. So I just like that comics have more control now and more say.
You know, part of comedy is doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And writing jokes. And, you know, in this life, you're not going to like everybody.
Right.
You know, life isn't that fair. I wish you could like everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, there's a handful of comedians and we all get along.
Mm-hmm.
And you look out for each other and you live and die for that motherfucker.
Right.
And that's part of this job, is encouraging. Especially once you get past 40 and you're longer in the tooth than the young guys. Sometimes going up to a young guy that's doing comedy 3 or 4 years and tapping him in the shoulder and saying, that's a funny joke, is better than going to Montreal.
Yeah.
It's better than getting a role in a movie, you know. It keeps you going.
Validation.
And validation from your peers keeps you going.
Yeah.
You know, I hate when somebody sends you a tape and makes you validate them, like makes you say something.
Yeah.
I can't say something. I got to see you 20 times.
Yeah.
I got to see you with different audiences at the store, how you tackle when you have to follow. Fuck, when Chris Rock walks in and said, you were supposed to follow fucking Johnny Dore or some fucking guy, and all of a sudden Chris Rock's walking, and you got to adjust your game.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm sitting in the back, and I'm like, God damn, Ian went up there with no fear.
Right.
He said, fuck Chris Rock, and he went up there like fucking a savage, you know. You really have to see people.
Yeah,
you get along with people when you see how they act, and after a while you have to reach out. You know, just because we're up there alone with a microphone don't mean we're selfish.
Right.
Does not mean we're selfish. It means that we just chose that. We want to go up there naked. Mm-hmm. Anybody could join an improv fucking troupe with eight guys and giggle and have your friends come see you and tell you a marvelous, you know, in my world, I respect stand-up comics. Mm-hmm. I really have a big, because I know what they're going through.
Right.
I know what they're going through at the fifth year, the 10th year, the 15th year, because you've been there. You've seen it. You know what you feel like. You feel like shit. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that Bill was producing the podcast for you and stuff, I was very happy.
Yeah.
You know, that brings that. How long have you been friends with Bill?
Shit, I've known him for a long time.
Long fucking time.
From New York. You know what I'm saying? And when I first moved out here, he had moved out here. He had booked some pilot, but then I guess it got canceled. So he was going to bounce, and I was like, yo, stick around.
Was that was 97.
97, 98 or something
98,
like that.
When his show got canceled.
And then he went back.
He went back.
Yeah.
And he did the right thing.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't listen to me.
He started from scratch.
Yeah.
Just hitting the clubs. He was a little depressed, you know, because we're all depressed when we lose that shot.
Yeah, because you...
we think it's going to define us.
Because normally, because you've seen that be somebody's only shot, is that one shot. And if you don't take that... Like, there's some great comics from, like, the 80s and 90s. Like, you know, what's the guy that killed himself in the shower? The Platypus Man. He had that,
Richard Jenny.
Which was one brilliant. Of the greatest fucking comics.
One of the greatest.
Just one shot, it felt like. And then after that, or maybe he had a bunch of pilots, but one made it to the air. And didn't work out, and that haunted him, it feels like.
Ian, what's a shot? What is a shot? Describe a shot for people who are not comics, people. What is a shot?
Well, I'll tell you what a shot used to mean, and then now you don't even know what the fuck a shot is right now, because it can happen so many different ways. A shot could be today an Instagram post that goes viral. It could be a YouTube. It could be when you just told me off air, you did the podcast with Rogan in December and everybody listened to it. And then the guy upstairs that you've been with the agency for 4 months called down the other guy and said, hey, you didn't tell me you had Joey Diaz. And then your ball gets rolling. You know what I mean? Like when I started, a shot was it's a step by step set of shots. First, you try to get an audition for Montreal, so you get the audition. That's a part of the shot. Then you audition for Montreal, and then they say, yes, you can go to Montreal. So that's another step or phase of the shot. And then when you're at Montreal, you kill. And then you got meetings. And after the meetings, you get a TV show deal. And then you see if your show gets picked up to even get shot. That's another part of the shot. And then you see if the show gets picked up to go on the air. And then you see if it lasts on the air. If it lasts a year or 2 years or 3 years, your shot is over. You know what I'm saying? Because nobody will remember that show. It's a show that was on 9 to 10 years or 8 years that people will remember. So, but then now you can kind of fail upwards, I feel like. Now if you are on a show, you can parlay that now more and say, well, I was on this show, and people are looking for people. There's more platforms, there's more channels, there's more shows. So people are like, all right, let's get that guy. He was on that, he was sanctioned by these people on this network or platform, so maybe we can use him on ours. You know what I mean? But the terminology shot has kind of changed.
Well, now shot for me meant your big break,
right?
You know how many big breaks I thought I was gonna get? 30. You know, I mean, let's take the longest shot, for example. Mm-hmm. I thought that was going to change my life. Right now, that it's been on the air for 13 years, we can get out of the way.
Right.
How can it not change your life? Look at the cast. Look what Adam Sandler, the damage he was doing in 2005,
right.
2004, 2000. Anything he touched turned to gold.
Right.
While I was shooting the movie, they said, it's all over. Like, it's all over. Like, once this movie comes out, you write your own ticket.
Here's the fucked up thing. I forgot you was in the movie.
Yeah, you know. It's
that's the fucked up thing.
The crazy thing is that I remember the movie getting released and just sitting at home and looking at the phone. And nobody called. And then Nick DeTuro got a bunch of movies. And Lobo got a bunch of movies. Uh-huh. And Tracy Morgan got put in fucking 30 Rock, and Terry Crews, forget what happened to Terry Crews.
That guy.
And
There I forgot he was in this movie.
Yeah, there I was, the fucking ugly chick at the dance.
Did you feel bad that when you saw everybody getting shit?
Horrible. Yeah. Horrible. How would you feel if you thought this was it? Your life was going to change.
Right.
When I say change, what was I? Did I think I was going to be driving a convertible fucking Maserati with 20 people in the car? No. You know what change was for me? 20 weeks of work.
Right.
200 people coming to my shows, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Getting an agent to book you. Getting a stronger theatrical agent.
Right.
None of that happened.
Did you have an agent at the time when you got it?
Yeah, he was a bum then, and he's a bum now. He's like Tony Montana in Scarface. You know, it was...
It didn't change him that you got that.
It set me fucking... Like, the movie came out in May, and by October, I was a fucking mess.
Damn, son.
Like, the phone hadn't rang. No agents came and spoke to me, you know. But if that was somebody else, I'm not crying.
Right.
If that was somebody else who got it, it would have been all over. It would have been a billboard. It would have been a variety thing. Right. Congratulations to this guy, our client, for doing this, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just the weird, the things that didn't happen. And I'm not crying. I got the experience of my life.
Right.
But when I was doing that movie, a wise man told me, he pulled me aside one day, goes, you're doing great in this, but this has to take time. It's got to take cultures.
Right.
And recently, I saw it. You go on the fucking Rogan podcast, nobody knows who the fuck you are.
Mm-hmm.
They look you up, and now they go, that's the fat dude from The Longest Yard.
Oh, shit.
Now they research more.
Yeah.
So what I learned was everything comes back in cultures.
Right.
Everything, that Mad TV you did that nobody fucking saw, now one night they air it at 11 o'clock and there's a million people home because it's a snowstorm and you're a fucking star.
Right.
So everything takes cultures. Everything comes in cultures.
Mm-hmm.
What you did in 2007, if it was good, history's going to come back to repeat itself.
Right.
You know how many times people have called, hit me on Twitter and said, I didn't know you were My Name is Earl? They don't know.
Yeah.
So it comes back. Now they'll go pay the $5.
Right.
Now that's validation. Ah, that's my favorite show. Now I got to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
All those things. And for me, it was not a movie, right? Like for me, it was not a movie.
Uh-huh.
It was not me killing on the road. People fucking hated me on the road.
Damn,
it was telling a hooker story. Telling a story about me mugging a hooker. So it blew me away.
And you told that on the podcast.
I told it on the podcast.
The only place you could fucking tell
it. And next thing you know, there was 100 people at a show down in Hollywood cheering to tell the hooker story.
Damn.
But the one thing I think you guys... Not are missing, but maybe don't realize how big it is because I'm almost 2 years in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see people, like, a shot for me is you letting me do the Wilbur, is Felipe letting me do a guest spot at Caroline's. Like, that sort of stuff that, like, to me, because, like, I've seen people who are.
And that's not a shot.
No, to me, it feels like a shot.
That's just an opportunity for you to look learn into the ocean from the fucking beach and go, oh. That's what the bottom of the ocean.
Oh no, but I don't mean I'm gonna get an agent and blow up. No, I just mean like it's the next step. It's like a
No. Right now you got no shots in your future.
you don't consider that a shot.
Your future is getting on stage right now for the next 2 years until your tongue.
You don't think there's levels of shots? No.
There's levels of shots, but for you, a guest spot at Caroline's isn't really gonna propel you. It's just to show you what it's gonna be like. It's like when Jim Valvano made his players cut the net down.
Mm-hmm.
Before the season began, to show them what it was, to show them what to feel like when they cut the net down.
Right,
that's what that's for you for.
That's fuel in your engine.
That's fuel in your engine.
Right.
Yeah.
When you go up in front of 1,200 people and you bomb, you're gonna go home, and that's fuel in your engine. I'll never be mad at you because we all went through that bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The first time we got up in a big theater and we throw it, and they gave you a guest spot, and you fought, and you're excited, and all of a sudden they didn't laugh at you. Now you're back to square one. So it's really not a shot. These are opportunities for you to peek behind the curtain and go, oh, that's what it's like to go up in front of 1,500 people.
Get some experience and learn.
That's what it's like to do a Friday night. Yeah. That's what it's like. You're at the two-year mark where all you need to do is get on stage. Put your head down.
Oh, no, and I don't expect anything. But to me, that's because I see people at open mics who have been at open mics for 10 years and haven't done a real show.
Because
so to me, that's a show. I mean, maybe in 10 years.
You control, in this business, you control what you want to do. and it starts by the word no. I'm not doing that no more. I'm not doing that place no more. I'm going to lose doing five spots a week, but the two spots that I do are really going to elevate me.
Right.
Those are the things that at your level right now, all you got to worry about is what you're not going to do anymore and how you're going to propel yourself up. But in the meanwhile, all you got to do, look at, Bill Burr taught us a big lesson. Bill Burr got his head knocked off with a TV show that was, the reason why it hurt Bill more than it did was because it had all the makings.
Right.
To be the next Seinfeld. It just wasn't a TV show with him and fucking some bum from the store. It had the guy from Office Space, Dharma from Dharma and Greg. It had an all-lineup cast that they had
put together. I don't remember that show. Yeah. I just remember he was on it.
So when he went down, if you learn anything from Tom Rhodes, Margaret Cho, Greg Giraldo, Tom Rhodes, Margaret Cho, Bill Burr, and Greg Giraldo, from those four people, the biggest lesson I learned was that once your show gets canceled, and while that show's getting taped, keep getting on that fucking horse.
Yeah.
Because that's the key. What you and I have witnessed is motherfuckers that get a TV show and go, shit, I don't need stand-up. Then the show gets canceled after 3 years. And now those guys that they were neck and neck with doing stand-up are now a level on top of them because they quit. And now their show's a failure. And now they got to start all over again. They're going out thinking they're going to get clapped. Oh, you on that show that got canceled, and you got to start all over again. Starting all over again? Those are the motherfuckers I take my props off to. Because most people, after their show fails at CBS, they go away. They become real estate agents.
Hilarious.
They really do, and we've seen it. And I've seen it. I can name five guys that came to this town that had more heat than you, me, and Sebastian put together.
Damn,
from Sebastian. Fucking Montreal, came down here, got a shot at a TV show. The show, the pilot didn't get picked up. Now the agents are a little weary. And then by mistake, one night they happen to walk into the Comedy Store and they have to follow. I saw a motherfucker that was good looking, looked like Steve Reeves. I forget what his name was. Looked just like Superman, built like Superman. Went up to Montreal in 98, got all this fucking clout. Deals.
Was he funny or just good looking?
He was just good looking.
Yeah, and they gave him the.
And they gave him. Yeah. And I'll never forget him walking into the store with four Jews, you know, with suits on, you know, and that motherfucker.
That's a lot of Jews.
And I'll never forget that motherfucker. I had to follow Dice in the main.
Oh, shit.
And he fell apart hard.
Damn.
I never saw him back at the Comedy Store. In fact, I never saw that motherfucker again.
Did Dice leave with his Jews?
Dice left with the three wise men. Only one little assistant Jew left with him. The other three, you know, I've seen that a thousand times. And people think they come out here and, you know, hey, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. In 1987, I thought if I got a job bartending, I'd be discovered.
Just bartending?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was mixed drinks, and somebody was in the comment and go, oh, you're perfect for Hollywood. I was retarded, too. And then I got here, and I realized, you know, in what's the movie that made those two guys famous? Not Sleepers, but the ones that they went out
of. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Swingers.
Swingers, yeah.
He has a line in there. He goes, what are you talking about? I got to work hard. I heard they were giving out development deals at the airport at LAX. That's what it was like here in 95. And the networks found out hard that the choices that all these networks put on them, these guys couldn't cover the spread.
Yeah, the networks gave money to the wrong people.
To the wrong people.
And then they
thousands
started pulling
of dollars.
Yeah, millions, bro.
Millions.
Yeah.
I know people that are on a list. I heard this from a VP once. We were talking. He was telling me that Fox, for example, every year they have a list of like 10 to 20 people that are like past movie stars or like had a show and it failed. They'll give him $250,000 just to lock them in just in case something happens. They're playing the long game.
Yeah.
Just in case somebody picks them up, boom. Just in case somebody has a script, boom, they got them. You know, people who that you've forgotten about.
Right.
Somebody like Gina Davis, for example, who was hot 20 years ago. They get a little, they'll give Gina Davis $250,000 and hold her for a year. $250,000.
Some just in case shit.
Just in case shit.
Yeah.
Then they'll give a couple blacks deals, a couple Latinos deals. So when the fucking black organizations and the Latino organizations raise their hand and go, what about black people? What about Latino? What are you talking about? We gave such and such a developmental deal. He didn't do that with him. Well, such and such has been on stage for a year. He doesn't even know how to wipe. He doesn't even know how to bring somebody up. I still remember.
That's crazy. They're just covering their ass.
Dog, I still remember being at the store on a Sunday night and them bringing a kid in who had destroyed in Montreal. And the kid, you could tell by how he held the microphone that he was a dud. You know how they hold the mic, open mic, just hold the microphone with the wing open? You could, he couldn't even do an intro.
It's like somebody with their first cigarette.
You know at the Comedy Store how you have to bring up the next guy? He didn't even know how to do the intro. When he put the mic back in, he was fumbling. They gave that guy $500,000 deal.
Oh my God.
You're not, but after taxes and everything, it's $340.
Right.
That's and okay. Guess what? That guy goes and buys a car, an apartment. His show don't get picked up. He's a waiter in 6 months. He's a waiter in 6 months. It's not even the shot. It's what you do with it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fighter and I punch you with the best right hook and you stagger a little bit and I get on top of you and he buckles you and gets out, I didn't do nothing with that right hook.
Yeah, you just need the shot.
That though, right hook, you know, was a fucking nightmare. Mm-hmm. You know, when we got here, the shot was this. Ian Edwards had a TV show. He puts you on reoccurring 6 out of 10 episodes. When the season's over, I go out and sell out fucking all the improv.
Right.
That's what it used to be like. No more. You could do 10 TV shows now. Ain't nobody coming to see your ass.
But I think Ian's right. If you have a big Instagram, you can sell out 10 shows at the improv. No.
I'm not talking about that. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Completely. But if you have an Instagram, okay, and you hit, and one of these greedy agents, these Gavones, pick you up, and they book you, and they charge $30 for you, you're going to get them for the 30 one time. It's like going to see Screech. He's going to get you for the 30 one time. And then you're going to go, ugh, this is a waste of my time.
Right.
Anybody who knows stand-up, number one, will not fall for that trick.
Right.
Anybody who's in the stand-up game will not fall for
that. Yeah, the beauty of it now, like, there's stand-up nerds.
Right.
They're so invested in this. And they follow everybody. They treat us like Marvel characters or some shit, or you know, DC versus, like, they invest just as much time into like where this person from, who they're associated with, what they said, what joke they got. Like, they're into it, and that's beautiful. The internet, like, I never knew comedy would ever be like that, but it's great that it is, because anybody that spends so much time is dedicated to comedy. When you come to town, they're gonna come and see you. You know what I mean? So it's so they, and they're loyal to you. And you're a part of their lives. You know what I mean? Like it's not even music. It's what taking the place of their music. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you have the soundtrack to your life. Like, we're the laugh track to their lives. And it's just, I don't know when it happened, how it happened. But even me, I'm taking a while to realize that myself. That, oh, shit. You know, sometimes people say some shit to me. I'm like, I didn't even remember I said that, or how did you even hear me say that or hear that comic say that? And people are just invested. And that's the advantage that we have right now.
I love when a stupid fucking show gets hot on some stupid channel and some fucking agent that's got no morals takes these three fucking idiots and puts them on the road, and they sell out all over the country. And these poor guys don't really know it.
Right.
They really think they're the shit. And it you know, you get people once, maybe once, twice, and then they go see Ian Edwards for the small 22.
Right.
And they go, well, that was impressive. That's a real fucking guy that knows what he's doing. He set up punchlines. He told stories. Mm-hmm. He had structure. He had continuation. You know, there's a guy that's a real fucking stand-up. You know, and there's not a lot of those guys around that are real. I'm not a real stand-up. I tell stories and I use energy to trick the fucking audience. This guy is a monologist. He tricks you with his fucking words. That's a real stand-up.
I'm going to agree with you on the compliment you gave me, and I'm going to disagree with you on what you say about you.
It's the truth.
But you have a you changed. Let me see how I put this, man. You're not traditional, but you are definitely a motherfucking comic. You know what I mean?
I'm not traditional. It breaks my heart that I'm not traditional.
Even real? You don't need to be. Like,
it breaks my heart.
It's scary to be you. Like, to go on a part of the... So, say the stand-up road is paved and everybody goes this way. And then Joey's, like, out here, but he's still getting there. Maybe even ahead of the people that's on there. And it's like, how to trust your instinct and do it a way that's never been done? You know what I mean? And maybe, I don't know, if circumstances made you just be like, fuck it, I'm going to be the ultimate Joey, the ultimate me. I don't know what it did, but that's just dope. You know what I'm saying?
That's what stand-up is.
Yeah.
It's being the ultimate you.
Yeah.
We get here and we get tricked. Hey, you got to do material about your family if you want to show.
Yeah, that's
hey, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Hey, you can't do this. And then one day something comes out of you. I hate fucking hikers. I wish they all die when they go on those hikes and they get lost. Uh-huh. And that's your heart talking.
Yeah.
And that's what the audience wants.
Yeah. And then you find out how many people hate hikers too.
And then they'll go, you know what? I fucking hate hikers too.
Yeah, I went on a hike this morning. I ain't want to go, and I hated everybody on the path with me.
It's your heart opens up. I looked at things. I looked how they wanted to do them, and I refused.
Right.
That style of I love.
And you probably struggled when you tried to do it.
Oh.
In the beginning, the way they said to do it, and that's so you're like, I'm in comedy. I'm trying to do it the right way, they say, but I don't feel like doing it this way, but I have to, or else I ain't gonna make it. And then the day you're like, fuck it.
If it means making it, that's a good one. That's the best one.
It's disgusting.
That's bronchitis killer right there.
You're not gonna thank him for curing you?
That's it.
Who raised you? You have no respect.
I think that one. I think Lee and I and somebody else were in here the other day and they said, I'm not a good comic when I'm getting ready for something. Like, I don't ever want to shoot a special again.
I know.
I don't ever want to shoot a special again. I'm not a special type of comic. Right. I can't shoot specials. Mm-hmm. There's certain comics that are brilliant. You and Anthony Jeselnik. And there's so many comics that do the setup punchline. They trick you. Mm-hmm. They take you down a road. They show you. They're magicians with their words. Mm-hmm. They show you this hand and they fucking finger bang you with the other one. I can't do it.
Right.
I get too tight.
Right.
I get too locked in. You know, when they say you're not performing for the audience, you're performing for the people at home. Right. All that shit fucks with me. You know what? I want to see live comedy. I want the glass to fall off the thing and break.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the specials have become too polished.
Right.
And I want to bring back that nasty, gritty, you know, Richard Pryor at the Improv with the menu behind them type shit.
Or damn, Red Fox recording an album at a fucking party or some shit like that.
How crazy was that?
In a basement like that.
How crazy was that?
Yeah.
I love all that. You know, my love of comedy was putting the fucking needle on the album and it being a little bumpy and you just heard it gritty and you heard people sneezing and you heard people moving their silverware away from the table. I love all that shit.
Yeah.
That's all part of the motherfucking mystique.
Because that type of shit takes you right there. You're listening to an album. All of a sudden, you're in that room where it was recorded while you're listening to the fucking album. It's like you took LSD and it just transported you to like another plane. You know what I mean? So I get that.
Who shot your special for you? All Things Comedy?
All Things Comedy.
They have their own crew, right?
They got a line producer who hired some people and we like looked at them and shit, but the director is another comic, and his name is Aristotle Theorist.
Okay.
And he just did something on Comedy Central called Goat Face, with a bunch of like other Arabic,
Middle Eastern. Yeah, with Fahim and those dudes. Yeah,
and Hassan, and I forgot some of the other people's names right now. So he directed that, and he acted in that. And so me and him were going to shoot the special regardless. I was like, listen, man, I got to shoot a special by the end of this year. So he said, hey, man, I'll direct it. And so we were out looking for venues and trying to narrow it down. And I was going to do the concept. Oh, shit, Lee's friends are here.
Yeah.
I was going to do the concept.
Yeah, it's his fart spraying him in.
as a TED Talk, right? Regardless. And then Burnham hit me up because he had a deal with Comedy Central to produce 3 specials. And he knew I hadn't had a special. Me and him had just done some shows in Atlanta. And he was like, hey, man, you want to, you know, shoot this, you want to be one of the specials. And now I was not, I wasn't going to use my money. They were going to pay me. You know what I'm saying? I was going to try to just use my money, shoot it, and then try to sell it. But this way, now I'm getting paid and there's already a home for it. So, and then I get to own it back in like 6 years. So it's fine. I'll take it. Good deal.
You happy with it?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Yeah.
How did you prepare for it?
This is how I prepared for it. I knew last year that I wanted to shoot a special. So I turned down writing jobs to prepare for it. Like before Burn Them and Hit Me Up, right? I know like if I take some of the writing jobs, I'm going to be in a room and I won't be able to hit the club as much. I'll be tired. I won't be able to write, hone, and, you know, like prepare the material, like cook it right and travel. So I just turned down any writing job, you know what I'm saying? And just, I did shows in Vegas. I did shows anywhere, here, fucking party, just anywhere. You know, it's improv, the Laugh Factory, the store, in New York, just anywhere. I just did shows.
Did you work on 15-minute chunks? Did you?
Yeah, sometimes I would headline places. I'd work out the whole thing. I did shows in Palm Desert where I got to do the whole thing, run the whole thing. I did the Rec Room. And then sometimes 15 minutes. Now, let me work on this part. I'll come up with a new joke. Let me make sure this joke is ready for the special and it fits in with the rest of my other material or the section of material that it's going to follow in that order. So, you know, just anywhere I could get on.
What kind of writing preparation did you do? How many hours a day? Would you have a time in the
I always try to write before I do a set at night. You know, so
just to loosen you up, to get your mind going.
To get my mind going, yeah.
It doesn't even necessarily have to be comedy with me.
Right.
I could write a couple paragraphs in a book. Yeah, that's what I do too.
Yeah.
Just to stay loose.
Yeah. So I just work on my shit before I go on, like an hour or two. And then sometimes you come up with new shit. Sometimes you just, like, my memory's shitty. Like, if I don't go on for 2 days, I don't even remember the whole act. Now I can't even remember 10 minutes. So it's just good to go over and get a refresher so that I'm not stumbling crazy up there. You know what I mean?
I felt that after I did the net, I didn't prepare correctly for the Netflix special.
Why not?
I didn't think about it, how I should prepare. If I would have known what I would have known today, I would have done 5 spots a week at the store at midnight. Midnight is perfect.
Right.
5 15-minute spots, Tuesday through Saturday. That's it. Nowhere else. That's it. Maybe go to the improv before the Comedy Store and try out the set and then polish it up on the way over to the store. If I ever get a special, that'll be when I did my special. Somewhere in my mind, I said that I'm going down to the store and I'm performing for people who already know who I am.
Right.
I want to try my material in places where people don't know who the fuck I am. Don't put me on the list. So I went to all the smaller clubs around town, and when I got there, I found myself catering to the room instead of my special. And yeah, it didn't hit me until I got on the plane that next morning when I got on the plane back home from Vegas from shooting the Netflix special was when I hit me. I didn't prepare right. That's what I always say when you get a motherfucker to get knocked out, when he's sitting there and the doctors are looking in his eyes. They ain't really. He's fine.
Right.
He's just thinking about all this shit, how you fucked up.
Right.
He should have worked more on his right punches. He should have worked more on his leg kicks. He should have stayed to the game plan, you know.
Right.
I think that working out at the store is like working out at that gym where Muhammad Ali used to work out when Angelo Dundee. It's as good as it gets.
Right.
You got to follow something new every night. It's dark. I don't know. Just something about working out at the store.
It's definitely a Philly boxing gym up at the store. You know what I'm saying? An old school Philly boxing gym. And that's what I like about it. Like, if your shit works there in the OR, most likely it'll work around the country. Unless you go somewhere where people are just ultra sensitive. You know what I mean? And I'm fine with my material not always working with those people. It wasn't meant for them. It's not meant for everybody. Everybody's not meant for everybody. So I'm fine with that. But yeah.
How long have you been in the game for now?
Shit, almost 30 years. Yeah.
It's going to be 28 years for me in July. Mm-hmm. How fucking crazy is that we stuck with something for 30 fucking years?
I had no choice once I saw Goodfellas.
Why?
Because I was young when I saw Goodfellas, and it was Joe Pesci. And it was the first time I saw him. I was like, who is this old motherfucker? And how come he never gave up and he got this moment, and now his career is going to last forever? I was like, because he's acting besides De Niro, who had already had an entire full career and does Goodfellas. And I didn't know Pesci was in, was it Raging Bull?
Raging Bull. Right.
But I don't know what much time there was in between Raging Bull and that. But I was like, if he had quit, you know, because back then I knew all the actors, because they weren't as many as there are now. There weren't as many channels. There weren't as many studios. So you could like, so if you see somebody, even if they had a bit role, you'd notice them. So I didn't notice Joe Pesci from anything. So I felt like this guy kept on acting wherever he was acting to be ready for this moment. And I was like, and when I saw that movie in that movie theater, I was like, oh, he's going to win an Oscar.
You said that?
I said that. I swear to God, that's how good he was. And when they killed him, sorry for any spoilers.
If you haven't watched Goodfellas by now, you should deserve to be shot. Yeah.
And when they killed him, the movie was over for me. I'm like, why am I watching this? Like, think about it. When Joe Pesci dies in Goodfellas, what else is left in that movie? And I was like, this guy. So that was a weird connection I made when I saw it. And I like, I'd never give up. And then another thing why I knew I'd never give up, because the moment I realized I was going to do it, I'm like, I'm doing this for life. And another thing was I'd quit soccer. And that was my first love and dream. And there was no professional league in this country. And then years after, there was one. And it was just too late to get back in a groove. And it's like, shit, if I'd never given up, I might have been able to play at least 1 year in the MLS. Just 1 year or two. And I was like, man, I'm never giving up on anything ever again that I love. And even when I'm not famous or rich, I'm still having some of the most fun of my life. I'm still laughing. I'm still meeting the best people. And people who I end up being fucking great motherfuckers, you know what I mean? That you didn't even know. They were just people to you. And you're like, you don't know. And look, they end up being trendsetters and shit like that, and like culture changers. And they're just motherfuckers who are in the gutter with you, just grinding. And we just like, this person's from Boston, from wherever. And then now we look down the road decades later and like, look at these people. And it's like, if I had given up on comedy and I'd gotten a job, you know how heartbroken I'd be at home?
Can you imagine?
Right now? You know what I mean?
I had the same experience as you.
Mm-hmm.
From when I got left back in the seventh grade, my life became basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, fuck pussy. Pussy makes you get left back. I'm going to focus on hoops like a motherfucker. Uh-huh. And that's all I did. I went to Willis Reed basketball camp, you know, superstar with the Hurleys. Mm-hmm. That's all I did. I took 300 jump shots every morning, like Jerry West. That's how I started my day.
Uh-huh.
300 jump shots, you know. Then I go play. Then I go home and lift weights.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd rest when it was humid. Then I go back out and play again. Then I go home and eat dinner.
Uh-huh.
And then I had late night games. And I was part of leagues. And my freshman year, some guy just didn't like me, so he didn't start me.
Yeah.
In fact, the motherfucker didn't play me.
Damn.
And I was destroying.
Right.
I mean, I was one of the best guys on that team by far.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't like me. And I let that motherfucking beat me.
Yeah,
like, he beat me that I turned to drugs. I mean, that was the beginning of my heavy drug zone, like acid and shit, because it didn't work out.
Right.
I didn't know how to handle it.
And it's just one guy.
That was one guy that and dog but, until 10 years ago, I was going to kill that motherfucker. I heard that he just became a fucking drunk. He got fired.
Uh-huh.
He was a piece of shit at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? Let him die a miserable life. But he changed my life forever.
Right.
For 20 years, I was pissed off at him. Mm. But me quitting basketball really fucked with me.
Yeah.
Like, it really fucked with me. Like, after I quit basketball, I lasted 2 more years in school.
Yeah.
Because I had no reason to go to school no more. Shit. You know, when I first saw a kid from my neighborhood in the final, a kid from my neighborhood he started for North Carolina as a freshman.
Jesus.
You know what that's like? Yeah. A white dude.
Damn.
In Jersey City, 6'7".
Who was that?
His name was Michael Corrin. And when I heard them go, a freshman from Jersey City, New Jersey, you know, like I was just overwhelmed. And let me know I could do it.
Right.
It lets you know a motherfucker from Jersey City can do it. Shit, I'm from fucking North Bergen. I got the tool.
Right.
So when it fell down and I quit that, it bothered me for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I knew for a fact. It took me 2 years to get on stage from being a pussy. Because I knew that once I got on that stage, there was going to be no turning back.
Right.
Like it was like, what do they say to you when you get married in sickness or in health?
Yeah, yeah. Death to us part.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was it.
Till death to us part.
And it was solidified when I got into the store in 97.
Right.
I was like, now I got a problem.
a good problem.
It's like that scene in Bronx Tale. Remember when he closes the door? Now you can't go.
Right.
That's what it was. Like, now I had nowhere to go. I was like Richard Gere in Office of the Gentleman. So I better follow Dom Herrera and keep taking these beats. Dom was killing that little skinny brother with the dreads that me and Rogan always talk about in the 90s at the store. He was spotless clean. He talked about bouncing a check and you got a standing ovation.
Hilarious. Who was that?
He had dreads and he fucking shot a movie that. Ooh, that's a little something for me. Lee, you can put this, this will go through the sweater.
It's bug spray, Lee.
He's breathing it in. Just because you have one of those little Japanese masks, don't mean you get the full effect of this.
SARS mask ain't going to help you.
Take a breath.
You take a breath.
Oh, that came over here.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah.
That shit is
terrible. Third one of the night. Oh, damn. I wonder why there's bugs in here. Disgusting.
The third one of the night. You count.
Joe, you could be on Naked and Afraid with this. Like, you know how Naked and Afraid the bugs eat the people at night? All you do is one fart and it's bug free.
Oh, this is onions and mushrooms. As soon as I was eating those onions, I was eating them with Lee's name on it and shit. I'm like, he's going to love these guests. Look at this poor bastard.
You hear that, Lee? He eats for you. He eats.
He does. I was not saying that. He had fish or a protein shake today.
I had that too.
I knew it.
I had a protein shake too.
Joey's like 7 years old. Look at his face.
I love it.
I'm just gonna start going to Muay Thai so I can learn how to kick him.
And it goes in his shirt. Now he'll smell it when he gets home.
Oh yeah,
it's like going to a Jersey bar when they smoke
cigarettes.
Shit on your porch.
He takes that shirt off in the morning. He's like, "What is that funky fucking odor in this goddamn shirt?" But that quitting that devastated me.
Yeah.
So when I knew I got into once 98 came, I was. However old I was, 35 or something, and I knew that this was it. This is the only shot I got of ever doing anything.
Right.
Never mind being successful.
Right.
Never mind being Kevin Hart. No.
Right.
I was just thinking about just telling people I got a job.
Right.
It's good enough for me, you know.
No, that's dope. I remember, like, in college, I went to New York Institute of Technology, because they had a soccer team that made it to the semifinals of Division II. And I was like, my sister went there, so I'm going to go there. He's hilarious.
Next time y'all switch seats with you.
I went there to see if I can get on that team, you know? And the first year was terrible because the fitness level of those guys, and they were English guys, Haitians, Argentinians, like people from all, like that coach got players from all over the world, like people that didn't make it in the professionally in England by the time they were like 19. By then it was over, but they were still fucking good in top level shape. And there's England had, you know, England was into like the, not the skillful player per se, but the robust, strong, fast robot looking motherfucker, you know? And then these players were like, not as physical as those British professional players, but they were fucking good. And So the first year was just terrible. Like, we'd do what, like, in the morning, the drills were like crazy, just the running, cross country, just fitness. So by the time I got to soccer to do scrimmage in the evening, I so fatigued, I couldn't even pass the ball to somebody with my shirt on. I just kick it away, just tired. So then the second year, I was prepared mentally. I passed all the fitness tests, and I played my ass off. And then the assistant coach was like, you're going to make the team, right? And then and he kept on telling the coach, who wasn't always down at the field on practice, like, Ian's ready. So then that coach, we had a scrimmage game, you know, preseason game against another team. And I was on the bench, and then he put me in, and then somebody passed me the ball, and the defense player got it from me, and then he subbed me right out. And then the next day they had a team sheet for all the players who were going to go on this away trip, and I wasn't on that away trip. And I was like, fuck this shit. And I just quit, because I put so much into it, and now I know it's kind of premature. You know, so that's why comedy.
How old were you, man?
Back then?
Yeah.
Like 2021.
What the fuck did you know?
Didn't know shit.
What the fuck did I know?
Yeah,
I
exactly. Was 15 and we think the world is over.
I thought it was over.
Yeah.
I really, really, when basketball ended for me, I still played on the street yard. You know, mm-hmm. I still played in the schoolyard, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what. I didn't want to be one of those guys that transferred because he didn't play at North Bergen. That shit goes with them people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not playing at the top notch school, what are you going to do?
Right.
What are you going to fucking do? And I was recruited by St. Anthony's. Mm-hmm. Me, this dude, Whitey O'Donnell, Lee Irwin, this big white boy that was 6'5", bad motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
And his first game in the eighth grade, 6'5".
Damn.
White, big, strong. But his first game of the season, Dad played Kennedy School, and there were some jumping Puerto Ricans down there, and they broke his fucking ankle.
Oh,
like they jumped on it and stepped on it on purpose, and Lee Irwin went down. So Whitey ended up, me and Whitey were freshmen, and I just did, and I could see that the kids on the team, they were like in pain. Like the kids that I was tight with, like Jackie McBreen and Whitey, kids that I've been playing with for a long time were like, they couldn't figure out why this guy wouldn't fucking play me, man.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure it out. And like 2 years later, he got drunk at a bar one night and told him I hated that fucking Coco kid. There was no way he was going to play. He knew he couldn't cut me.
Right.
Because he would have got shot. But he knew that. And after that,
he just hated on you.
He just did not like me. And I still remember being in practices. We used to do this thing, Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
where it's a fast break drill.
Mm-hmm.
And brother, I stole the ball. If they fast braked on me 10 times, I would steal the ball 5 times. Like I was that good. You know, I was a good rebounder. I was a great shooter inside the paint. I was tough, but he just didn't give me any love.
Right.
And I just decided the best thing to do. I quit 2 things, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I quit them back to back. I quit basketball first. And then I quit karate.
And then, so you were doing karate?
Once I quit basketball and I started doing the drugs, the karate guys are nice kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for me to do drugs, I couldn't do drugs around them.
Right.
And when I'm saying drugs, it was smoking pot and drinking Boone's Farm.
But that's big back then.
That was big back then. Yeah. Those karate guys didn't even, like, they looked down at that. So I was sick and tired of living that double life. So I just.
Double life. That's hilarious.
I was living a double life.
I know it is a double life. It's just so funny to look back at it.
I couldn't. I would go to their parties, like at 6, and throw a few sidekicks, and we would talk about things. And then at 10, I would go to the fucking drug parties. Get all tootsalootsed up, and they didn't know about it. And then one day I was like, I can't hang out with them no more. I'm not doing them anymore.
I'm just living one life.
I'm just living one life. I'm a party. I'm going to do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I quit everything. That set the pace for me, Ian, to quit everything.
Right.
Nothing was good enough. Nothing.
Right.
Every time I got a job, what am I making? 10 an hour? I work 2 days. I make what? 160? Mm-hmm. I can make that selling an 8-ball.
Right.
Once you sell drugs, you can't go back to a day job. You're like, what the fuck is this shit?
Right.
So I quit everything, and it became, I just quit everything. Kept quitting. After that, I just quit it. When things got rough, quit.
Right.
Quit. quit. And finally one day I go, for me to get anywhere, you got to stick it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I started selling cars. All the salesmen go with the hot salesman. Ian leaves, and then Ian calls me and goes, bro, you're not going to believe it. We can't keep the cars here. And I go, and there ain't nothing going on. Then 60 days later, I leave, and I go somewhere else. Then 60 days later, I go somewhere else. And then one day, I stop at my own dealership. And out of the 12 guys I started with, that one dude stayed. And he's making $200,000 a year because he stayed. He learned the product.
Right.
And he committed to it. Right. Me, I was going to Dodge 1 month. Let's go sell Toyotas. You don't know nothing about the car.
Right.
You don't build no rapport. And that's why now I learned to stay with things.
Yeah, man.
Because I fucked up so many things, and I learned that it's not quitting the big things as much as the little things.
Right.
Like every Monday I have a sheet with the shit I got to do. I got 4 workouts. I got 2 podcasts.
Yeah.
I got to do 5
And
spots.
You do a lot of shit. You end up doing a lot. Like, when I turn on my Instagram in the morning, I see your morning message. I'm like, already how up. Is he doing this?
I'm already up. That's like, what how needs is to he be doing? Done.
He's like, hey, you're smoking. You're saying something fucking funny. And you just start the morning off. I'm like.
And I won't tweet the rest of the day. Just let them know they're awake. They could do it. They could do it.
Right.
What the fuck is it? You know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, damn. Right? Don't you wake up and go, damn, I gotta go fucking back into that office and deal with those people or whatever. And then you gotta kick yourself in the ass. Ain't nobody gonna kick you in the ass.
Right.
You gotta go, you know what? Fuck these bitches.
Right.
I'm gonna go in there and bitch slap everybody with my dick today. And that's the attitude that gets you into the shower. Yeah. That's the attitude that gets you out of the fucking house. And that's it. Yeah. Bro, I did more. I was thinking on the way over here, I did more today than most people do in a week.
Yeah. But
like emails, but, contacting people.
But no one would think that you do that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like just your demeanor, your lifestyle, or maybe just your past. Like, you're a fucking hard worker, bro. You know what I'm saying?
You have to be. You have to be.
But you know what? You always hustled.
What? You don't work as hard as I do? I know for a fact you do.
But I might not think I do.
None of us do.
Yeah.
Because we don't report somewhere.
Yeah. Yes.
We don't report somewhere.
Yeah.
But you know, I wake up in the morning at 10 o'clock, all those agents and managers I talk about, I got an email, Jack. Good morning. What's cracking today? That's the first email I send out. I wake everybody up.
All right.
And then after I wake them up, I call those bitches. Just to let them know the dick is hard and I'm ready to stick it in somebody's ass. You know what I'm saying? Just send me to that fucking location. I'm ready to drop that fucking bomb on them. And it takes a lot to be a comedian. And people really have no idea.
And it takes even more now than it used to. Before, you just wrote your jokes, and if you got a good agent, they would handle everything. Now, you got to do everything.
Listen, the agents in the old days had 11 clients. Now each agent has 25 clients.
Right.
You know, they can do some of the work for you, but they can't do it all. And they won't do it all.
They won't.
Like I said earlier, you have to gather the sticks, gather the moss, rub the sticks together, blow oxygen, and hopefully eventually they'll light the match.
Right.
And set that project on fire, or that thought you have on fire, or that idea you have on fire. But you pretty much got to do the legwork.
Yeah, man.
Comedy Central just didn't give Ari a storyteller show.
Right.
He went into the fucking little room at the improv where they served no booze. Then he started selling out the bigger room. Then he got the digital. Remember? He got the digital first.
Yeah, it was on digital.
That went right to YouTube. And then he got the big show.
Yeah.
But he had to start that. That wasn't somebody. An agent didn't call him and go, hey, I just was driving to work and I got this most brilliant idea. Why don't you start a storytelling show? They're not going to tell you that.
Yeah,
you have to build it from scratch. Look what Kill Tony's doing.
Yeah.
Look at what the dude did with that you sing. The rock and roll, my man from Baltimore,
Josh Adam Myers.
Josh Adam Myers did a phenomenal job. Did the show get picked up at Comedy Central? No, but he fucking sold it.
Right.
And if he sold it once, that means you can sell that bitch again.
And he still does it.
And he still does it.
Yeah, he still does
it. You know, what we all forget was that when I got into comedy, Bill Maher was on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Bill Maher was one of the original shows with Politically Incorrect. Mm-hmm. Comedy Central canceled him. Where'd he take it to?
HBO.
No. ABC.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, ABC.
Yeah.
With your boy writing, JP.
Yeah, JP.
Anderson. What's his
name? KP Anderson.
KP Anderson.
I saw KP Anderson today.
Look at that.
That is crazy.
That's my boy.
I haven't seen him in years.
20 years he's been there for me. Questions. When he was a little writer on, we used to go see Bill Maher.
Uh-huh.
And he was like a little writer for Bill Maher. And he'd come out and welcome us. You know, but I was curious if you had a writing thing just to help young comics. Is there a system that you use? Is there a certain, like for Mitch
stand-up,
Hedberg?
Like for stand-up, it's like, let that marinate a little bit. Let it affect
me. I'm about to throw this water on you. You stop.
It's getting thick now.
This is going to be a long answer, so you'll probably get hit with a lot more by the end of this. Look at Lee's face.
Oh, yeah. He's loving this. Don't worry about
it. Oh, yeah. I'm loving it. Yeah. Calling ZipRecruiter in the morning. Bullshit.
Joey actually blows it over there. That's hilarious.
I'll light a match over here.
God damn.
That's why you don't breathe any.
That
info.
Shit is strong. Hey, bitch, you ain't coughing.
Because I'm not breathing.
That little half a fat cough went away. Disgusting.
Charles Bronson over there. His
Charles Bronson covered his ears.
He had good skin when he first came here. Like Charles Bronson.
Bruce Lee's not smiling anymore.
Oh.
Good Lord.
That is tremendous. Yeah, those are tremendous fun.
Yeah, that's Chardonnay right there.
That's how the little skinny Chinese dude that eats 40 hot dogs. That's the kind of tear gas that
Kobe comes out.
No, he doesn't even have farts like that.
Yes, he does. These are tremendous. Get together, cocksucker. I'm sorry to interrupt you guys.
So what was the question again? My mind just
writing, you
just
know,
got reset.
I remember one day I was playing tennis with Mitch Hedberg.
Mm-hmm.
And I said something to him. I go, Mitch, I called you in the morning, you didn't answer. And he goes, I don't pick up the phone from 9 to 11.
Mm.
And he goes, I turn everything off, and I just write. I don't get up.
Mm.
And I take a breather, I fuck around, and then I do it again for another 2 hours.
Mm.
And I was blown the fuck away.
Yeah.
Like, I was really? I sat down for 10 minutes. That's why he was Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah, exactly.
I was a bum living off of fucking Ralphie May and shit like that. And Josh Wolf.
It's hilarious.
Do you have the same type of, I mean, like you said, you just do the 2 hours before you go to the comedy store.
Like right now, I'm naked. You know what I'm saying? I shot the special in December. I got to get another 45 minutes at least to start feeling comfortable again, like a hot 45 minutes. You know what I mean? Because, you know, people are like, come see you. And you're like, I thought it. They said he was funny. They don't understand you're rebuilding.
How crazy is
that? You know what I mean?
I hate that period. That's the worst. And when you got road dates.
Yeah.
And you can't keep doing those jokes in the special.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck? That's why after you shoot a special, just take it off.
Right.
Just stay at the comedy. So, you know, Jeselnik had some pretty interesting shit. He says that he works out the material for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Then he does clubs for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Then he takes that same material into 3 theaters.
That's cool.
So it takes him 3 years to put out a fucking special, which is a new hour.
Right. And that's respectable. But I've seen people like be selling out. They skip the comedy store part and go straight to selling out weekends at major comedy clubs. And I'm like, how the fuck are you doing that? How is these audience receiving these jokes? Like, it's just crazy to me.
The old jokes or the new jokes?
The new jokes. Like, they shoot the special, and then you hear, all right, they're doing a weekend in Ontario or just wherever the improv is.
To support the special.
Nah, to write with new shit.
Well, here's the deal. All right, so the whole process changed because, again, of greed.
Right. Yes.
It all changed because of greed.
Right.
You had two options, just like a band.
Mm-hmm.
You either release the album and tour it
mm-hmm.
and not do the same material, maybe keep the closer.
Right.
You know, maybe you had a really good closer on that special,
mm-hmm.
and you want to keep that closer because getting the closer is the hardest fucking thing.
Right.
You know, I see that.
Mm-hmm.
But so let's say you shoot the special in December.
Right.
In today's world, they're so greedy, they get that motherfucker out in 8 weeks.
Right.
Like, that investment has to fucking flourish for them immediately.
Right.
So they get you out right away. That's what I didn't like.
Right.
Now you're stuck 3 months. First off, after you shoot a special, if you work hard or you have a heart, you got to take a week off.
Yeah.
You got to take a week off. You have an idea of what you're going to say next. And then it's like anything else. For 3 weeks, you struggle.
Mm-hmm.
You eat bag of dicks, those new jokes, nothing's working.
Mm-hmm.
And then boom, you got 5 minutes.
Right.
Oh, shit.
Right.
I got five motherfucking minutes. Then it's 3 more weeks and you're popping 7. Mm-hmm. And then that joke you wrote 2 years ago that you had nowhere to put.
And you find it.
You find it. Boom.
Yes.
Now you got 18.
Because I got a joke like that.
There you go.
In my new 25 right now.
There you go. That you wrote 4 years ago.
I forgot about it. I was looking through the old part.
There you go.
And I was like, oh, court, the Bible. All right, boom.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's so weird how a bit that you wrote 6 years ago might mm-hmm. not work. That's why you got to look through your old notebooks. I once, a great comedy writer, joke comedian, told me that if you look through your material before you go on stage, all these things
mm-hmm.
increase the percentages of you not bombing.
Yeah.
They increase the percentages, you know, looking through your material, mm-hmm. going, scoping through it. You know, I know Dice came in here the other day, goes, look at these guys that they actually think about what they're going to say. You know, for a young comic, I didn't want them to hear that.
Right.
I know what Dice means by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not to get caught up in your material.
Right.
To go up there and do your thing. If the material, you got plan B, don't get caught up right. in your material.
It's just, you have some structure, but if some shit happens.
There you go.
You're ready. But that's a part of it. You're ready to call an audible immediately. If they got 3 defenders on you, on the right, and they're charging linebackers at you, you got to be ready for the audible. You know what I'm saying?
You got to be ready for Freddy like a motherfucker.
And then, you know, so you know what you're going to say, but if you don't get to say it, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. You just have to be, that's comedy. You know, you have to know that going in, but you have to prepare, I feel like, to have the set. But if some better shit jumps off from the audience, or there's somebody with a crazy laugh that night, or you were saying earlier, if the drink falls, you know, you have to react to those things. You can't just be, you know. And I listen to I used to record sets and never listen to them. But since I feel naked now, like, I've just been listening to everything. Like, especially if I don't get to do the hour before the set, you know, writing before the set, at least the drive from my spot to the club, I'm listening. And then I'll think of a line that I could add to the thing. And then I've written that day, because all writing really is if you add a line a day, and it's 365 days in a year, you got 365 new things. And that's more than an hour. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, it is.
So it's like, just stay involved with your shit. And even when you're washing your car, or you're just doing something in the shower, shit will come to you because you're just in tune with it. You're living it.
You know, write it right down.
And you write it right down.
Yeah, because
you get free shit. You try to write. So sometimes something might come out, sometimes not. But because you're involved with it, like you fuck around and you just write anything that has nothing to do with stand-up. But when you're on stage, shit comes out because you stretched. You know what I'm saying? You stretched. You're ready to fucking run the race. So then you're up to speed and your automatic shit kicks in. You know what I'm saying?
How much time difference was it from when you did the CD for Conan to this special?
Say like 3 years.
Oh, so you were way beyond ready then.
Yeah, I was ready. The material was getting stale. Yeah, I was ready. The material was getting stale. Like, that's why I was like, I was going to pay my own money to shoot it in December, because I couldn't hold on to that material anymore. I couldn't say it anymore. I had to at least shoot it and put it in the can. And if I didn't sell it, at least it was in the can. At some point, I could release it. And then I could just move on and go to the other shit and start writing new shit.
When did you shoot it?
Shot it in December. Yeah.
So it's been 7 months, 6 months, 7 months,
yeah.
And then the Balboa Theater?
Yeah. What? No, where is that? The...
San Diego. I remember reading
something. You mentioned him earlier. That was Brendan Schaub. He did the Balboa Theater in San Diego. I did Long Beach. What's the fuck? What's the name of the place? Now I forgot. That's how great my memory is.
That's right. You did Long Beach. Like December something.
Yeah.
And then there's Friday night, Comedy Central.
Yep.
8 o'clock. You ready to rock?
Midnight.
Yeah. So you ready to rock? You going to have a viewing party or anything?
I didn't put one together. Fuck that takes work.
That takes work.
Yeah.
You got any dates coming up that these fucking marvelous people could go support you and see you?
Yeah, I'll be at the Funny Bone in Ohio the week after that.
What's Columbus? That?
Columbus, Ohio.
Okay, it was just that great room.
Great room. And then Comics in Connecticut the week after that. This great is all room. In July. And then in August, I got a date. What the fuck is that date? Listen, go wait a few hours. This is coming out Wednesday?
Yeah.
All right. Go to my website, IanEdwardsComedian.com. It'll be updated by then, and the dates will be on the calendar.
Ian, like I told you a couple minutes ago, I think you're one of the best comics working.
Thank you, brother.
I think you're a monologist and a half. You always make me laugh.
Thanks, man.
And most important, you're a fucking gentleman. And you came in here and you brought some flavor into this motherfucker. Hey, I've got a lot of white people in here lately. I gotta fucking settle the spirits. You know what I'm saying? I want to thank you guys for listening. Do not forget, this weekend I'll be at the Charlotte Comedy Zone. Thursday, Friday and Saturday and August 9th at the motherfucking Lincoln Theater. Just one more word from our sponsors and I'll get out of your hair. Let me explain something to you filthy fucking animals, all right? When it comes to CBD, you're lost. Everybody's lost. Nobody knows what to do with a CBD anymore. You drive around, CBD this, CBD that. They got you all confused. And half the shit you're buying is fucking Ugats anyway. Listen. I did the legwork for you. The CBD company you want to do business with is called CBDLion.com. They are my favorites. I live on the tinctures and the motherfucking gummy bears. But if you want to smoke it, they got vape, they got cartridges, they got a shatter. But like I said, I'm into the tincture. Their products are clean. And they aren't like the fucking fakes that you with the false advertising that they sell at gas stations and shit like that. If you're buying CBD all at a gas station, shoot yourself right motherfucking now. CBD Lion makes CBD products from start to finish. They have you covered. Go to CBDLion.com and check out their third-party lab results yourself. What I'm going to do for you is this. The Church family gets 20% off when they use Church at checkout. C-H-U-R-C-H at checkout. That's what type of party this is. So go to CBD Lion right now. Right now. And pick out whatever you need. I'd go with the raspberry gummies. I'd go with the 1,000 or 5,000 milligram tincture to get you fucking going. And I'd also, hey, if you like the vapors, go with the vapors. If you want to do the shatter, go with the fucking shatter. Go to CBD Lion, press in Church on the way out, and get started right now. You're going to be fucking happy, Uncle Joey Turnjohn, to CBDLion.com/church. Also, listen. My teeth are fucking green, but it's not because I don't brush. It's because of 30 years of abuse. Picking your toiletries somehow always involved a delicate game of stacking and space hacking. And you don't get us started on lotion exploding all over your dop kit. That's why Quip, the electric toothbrushes, work just as well at home or as they do on the go. I use Quip. I take it with me on the road because it's compact and it's wireless design, tucks easily in the corner of your carry-on or your back pocket if you're just spending the night like Oscar Madison. Plus, the travel-ready cover protects your brush from sandy swimsuits and luggage slip-ups. And there's a 3-month battery life that will last through a season filled with weekends away. They're making it easier for you to even keep up with your wake-up and wind-down routine when you're out of the office. Listen, Quip is an electronic toothbrush for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. People brush too hard, and some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive. But Quip has a built-in 2-minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides and help you clean your whole mouth evenly. Up to 90% of us do not brush for a full 2 minutes or don't even clean evenly. Multi-use covers work as a stand and mounts to mirrors, slides over your bristles to pack and protect your quip on the go. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. And a friendly reminder when it's time for a refresh and to stay committed to your oral health. 70% of us use old, worn-out bristles that are ineffective, all right? I used to be one of those people, but ever since I've got Quip, everything has changed. Quip is one of the first electronic toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association, and they're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals, and they have thousands of verified 5-star reviews. And kids brush, my daughter brushes with it. The new brush is the same as our original version, just tweaked for size-down mouths. Kids are inspired to brush better and more often with oral care that looks and feels like the products adults in their life use. And they're proud to use Quip. My daughter loves it. She just pulls it off the mirror, brushes, works with the timer, and she puts it back, and she's 6 years old, and she's got beautiful teeth. That's why you got to help them develop a grown-up routine without the childish gimmicks. Why I love Quip? For the reasons I told you, okay? It's easy to carry, it's effective, and it keeps your mouth clean. You know how much bacteria you have in your mouth? Quip knocks that out. Now listen, what I'm going to do is this. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/Joey right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's right, I said free. Listen, Quip is the future, and it's the way to go. The wireless design tucks easily in the corner of your carry-on, and you're going to love it, okay? Do me a favor. Go to Quip right now. Getquip.com/Joey and get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/Joey. I want to thank CBD Lion. I want to thank Quip. But most importantly, I want to thank you motherfuckers for listening and supporting the podcast. I also want to thank Ian Edwards for coming out.
My pleasure, homie.
And for being a beautiful guest tonight. I'll see you motherfuckers next Monday. Tip top, Magoo. If not, I'll see you Thursday night at the fucking Comedy Zone and bring reefer, bring everything. Edibles, Vicodins, Gorilla Biscuits, Boogaloo Pills. I don't give a fuck. Lee, kick this goddamn mule.
I got a brand new funk. Kick down, party for your ass. Let's get it on, like we said before. See the brothers for the trouble, hate the busted bubble, cause we rumble from our lower level. To condition your condition, we're gonna do a song that you never heard before. Make it all jump along to the education. Brothers gotta work it out and stop chasing. In the street all willing to work it out. Come on, y'all, let's go to work. So many of us in limbo, how to get it on? It's quite simple, 3 stones from the sun. We need a piece of this rock. Go! Indestructible soul, answers to this question. To the brothers in the street, school, and the prisons. History shouldn't be a mystery, our story's real history, not this. We gonna work it out one day till we all
get paid
the right way in full, no bull talking, no walking, driving, arriving, and styling. Tell them soon you'll see what I'm talking about. Yeah. One day the brothers gonna work it out. United we stand, yes, divided we fall together. We can't stand tall. Brothers that try to work it out, they get mad. We vote, revise, realize they're super bad. Small chance a smart brother's gonna be a victim of his own circumstance. Sabotage, shell shock, rock, and boom. Day in the life of a fool, like I said before, to live it low. Life, take your time, time, yo, go slow. Look ahead, not a thing to fear. Brother to brother, not another as sincere. Teach a man how to be a father, to never tell a woman he can't bother. You can't say you don't know what I'm talking about. But one day,
on the strip, on the
brother's gonna whip it out.